MoneyWeb at midday for all your up-to-date stories.
But let's start with this. Johannesburg residents are once again grappling with severe water outages. This time, some areas have been left high and dry for up to 86 hours. The problem is still being resolved. Something in the region of 4 million people have been impacted. The crisis, I don't think I need to tell you, is sparking growing frustration as taps run dry, and solutions at this point do seem a little bit out of reach. So I want to discuss what's behind this latest water disaster, what it means for the city's future. And I've got two guests. First is Dr. Ferial Adam from the water lobby group WaterCan, who I'm hoping will share some insights into systemic failures and advocacy as far as this issue is concerned. Then after that, I'll be in conversation with Johannesburg Councillor Nicole van Dyk to understand what's being done and what isn't. But first of all, Dr. Adam, a very warm welcome to you. And are there immediate interventions that government can or should have prioritized to stabilize the city's water supply before and during this crisis?
So good afternoon, and thank you for having me on your show. Yes, I think that there are immediate kind of things that the government should have done. And, you know, we've been talking about this for a while, almost 2 or 3 years, where we know this was coming. So the focus on infrastructure and the focus on leaks as a kind of low-hanging fruit would have been something to do in the immediate. And that is something that I think, while it's been done, but I don't think it's been done as urgently as we need it to happen.
And Dr. Adam, this also reflects broader, as I mentioned in my introduction, structural reforms and also systemic issues in water governance. What are those reforms, in your opinion, then, that are needed and that can be implemented sooner rather than later, I guess, with an eye on cost?
So I think in terms of, you're right, it's very much a systemic issue, and that we've got, you know, 10 years of a failing system, and that links to, it has a history in kind of the corruption that was happening at state capture level. So I think when we look at what can be done in terms of water governance, what we're seeing right now is the challenge of a systemic issue that happened at a national level that is now feeding through to a local government level. And the issue with the policy and governance is that national government is saying, well, this is a local government issue. And if that continues, that kind of break in kind of roles and responsibilities, it's actually going to make things much worse. So the first kind of reform we need is that, how do we get national government as an oversight to actually play the role that they need to play without municipalities falling apart? And that, for me, is something that is a challenge that I'm not sure we can get to right now, but it is something. So one simple way, for example, which needs governance at a national level, is to ring fence funding at a local government level to focus on water and sanitation. That needs a national intervention, and that is something we need quite urgently.
What do you think is preventing that national intervention? Why is there this break between provincial and national discipline in this respect?
But it links to, you know, our policy and our government, well, our legislation, where there seems to be a misunderstanding of cooperative governance. So there's the act that basically, it kind of talks about how do we make sure that we work cooperatively rather than holding people accountable. And for as long as that is in place, then for many years, what we saw is national government does not then, hold local government accountable for what they've been up to and talk about, no, we need to come to a cooperative solution. We passed that stage right now. So I think, and that's part of it, we need to look beyond that. And that, by the way, that act, it talks about doing that, but it doesn't say we can't, as national government, then step in to hold a local municipality accountable or make sure that they do the work that they need to be doing.
And Dr. Adam, your argument is also predicated, I imagine, on municipalities themselves recalibrating their planning framework to make sure that they are integrating citizen science and real-time monitoring into water crisis management, which again doesn't appear to be happening.
No, it doesn't. And the reality is that what we're seeing on the ground, Jeremy, is that without having your citizen science, there's no way that local governments can actually figure out what's going on, because I think that we're in crisis mode. So incorporating that and incorporating citizen science into that kind of planning would assist in the response time and also being proactive rather than reactive.
Are we reaching a point where we seem to be lurching from crisis to crisis, and that people are now just simply, again with the caveat, those who can afford it, business and individuals, are simply taking matters into their own hands, and as it was with Eskom, are simply bypassing the problem at their own expense?
That's exactly what's happening, and that's a problem, right? Because the difference is with electricity, you've got solar, you've got wind, you can go off grid without affecting the bigger system, so to speak, right? But with water, there are no alternatives. So even if you go off grid and you say, okay, we're going to drop a borehole here and drop a borehole there, if that's not regulated, if we don't have checks and balances in place, we can, in a drought period, and we're experiencing a very hot period right now, we're not saying we're in drought, but in a drought period, even your water table, your underground water, would reduce in levels. And we need to keep track. We don't have a proper assessment of what's going on with our groundwater. So that's the challenge, is that going off grid, like having everyone drop a borehole, could actually be detrimental to our full system.
Do you think this is going to go on for the foreseeable future? Do we just need to acknowledge that it's a problem, it's not going to go away, and we've got to become more inured to it?
Unfortunately, I'd like to say no, but it's the truth. That is the reality, is that it's going to get worse before it gets better. And what we're trying to really force on, you know, from WaterCan's side on the ground, is to really get government to speak with the urgency it needs. It needs that kind of like fire, you know, that says that we really need to all look at our water supply systems, because there's a problem. But every time government speaks, it's like, no, it seems as if they have it under control, or no, it's not a crisis. That kind of language makes it very hard for people on the ground to then say, okay, I'm going to save, or I'm going to use less water, or listen to any of that kind of awareness raising kind of information that comes out from government.
Are you confident, Dr. Adam, in Rand Water and Johannesburg Water's technical ability, not only to manage the problem right now, but going forward?
So I went to the site visit on Saturday to look at the Rand Water kind of upgrades at the Eckenhof station. I do think that they're doing the right thing, that they have the right advice, and they have as much as they can. Joburg Water have the right people in place. They have the tech, but you know what? We don't have enough. So they are constrained budget-wise. They don't have the resources for enough people on the ground. They don't have the resources to get people and keep people within Joburg Water. And so that is the challenge, is that they don't have the capacity or the amount of resources and people needed to deal with the issues right now. And that's why we're asking for an increase in the budget.
Dr. Ferial Adam, thank you very much indeed from the water lobby group WaterCan. Let's continue this conversation now, and I'm joined by Councillor Nicole van Dyk. Let's understand, as I said a little earlier, what's being done and what isn't. Councillor van Dyk, a very warm welcome to you. I understand that you've stepped out of a council meeting. Are you able to tell me what's emerged today?
Yes, so this was actually a marathon meeting. We started at 9 o'clock this morning, and it's still ongoing with Joburg Water and councillors. It's vehemently clear that planning was not done properly for this shutdown. There were numerous complaints all over the city that there were just not nearly enough tankers, not JoJo's. And we did highlight this, you know, with them in the meeting, when they said that there will only be 75 roving tankers, 150 JoJo tanks. You've got 70% of the city out. That's nearly 4 million residents, hundreds and hundreds of suburbs. So that was never going to be enough to capacitate what was going on.
In your consultations with them, Councillor, are you discerning either a sense of urgency from them or acknowledgement that planning could have been more effective?
So there is acknowledgement that the planning was a it could have been a lot better. They didn't call it a failure, like many of us did, because this is not the first time we've gone through this. We've been going through this on a semi-regular basis since July last year when the first round of rainwater maintenance started. And councillors have always made it very clear that the one thing that is desperately needed is a crisis control centre. When these things are going to happen, we've got everybody in place. There is communication teams between Joburg Water and the councillors, and that's just not happening. Communication is highlighted as a complete failure every single time this happens. The one good thing I will say is we are seeing that keeping water in the system for those 3 days that it's been shut down does seem to be working. Because those systems aren't going to take as long to recover as they normally would. So that was a very good plan. We were glad to hear that was in place. But when it comes to the deployment of tankers, that is a complete and utter disaster. And alternative water supply residents are dead. And there was sporadic violence that broke out in some areas where tankers were leaving. They had to go refill. It was really not well planned.
Now, Johannesburg Water has put out a statement which was circulated widely saying repairs at the two stations are now complete. So is there any flow happening at all?
Yes, there is. So what they've said to us this morning is some systems are already showing good signs of recovery, but they cannot pump at maximum capacity yet. Rand Water is giving 100%, but in order to eliminate bursts happening all over the city, they have started off at a 50% pumping capacity as Joburg Water through to the network, and they will increase that gradually throughout the day. The big question now comes, there were multiple systems where the outlets were closed, and a big concern for councillors, obviously because of what happened in March with that closed valve, we need to know when they're going to our reservoirs to open those systems, because that's creating a lot of anxiety that they're going to forget certain valves. Yeah, and then not open them properly, and then residents are going to sit for an extended period without water when they didn't have to.
Of course, if you live in a higher lying area within Johannesburg, yes, you're still going to be frustrated for days to come.
Absolutely. So the three high line systems are obviously Hurstville, which has been severely affected, the Linden system, and then Southfield. The Linden system is, I've got residents reporting water back in certain areas, but it's only in maybe two or three suburbs. This system feeds close to 100 suburbs, and so it's still going to move very gradually. And I think that's why Joburg Water put out that statement 5 to 14 days post maintenance to recover these systems. But the Linden systems are looking very healthy. Hurstville is sitting at around 22%, which is better than it's ever sat before. So hopefully once pressure starts coming in from the system and their flows start increasing from Rand Water, those systems will recover faster.
All right, we've had a couple of days of repairs. Are you able to tell us what difference in the long term, once water starts flowing properly again, this is all going to make? They wouldn't have done this unless this whole thing was very important.
Yes, so this is a Rand Water system that's being fixed. And what they've done is they've added additional capacity, but also done something in their pumping rooms that means that if one system needs to be shut off, you don't have to shut off the whole system. You can now keep water flowing for the most part when maintenance does need to be done. And this was a very big thing, because too often when we've seen maintenance, you have to shut down an entire network rather than just being able to shut down the various pumping stations and leave the other pumping stations functioning. So if that's what they've managed to achieve, and we're not going to see these big interruptions from Rand Water anymore, especially, when there's power failures, then this will be a great help for us.
All right. Thank you very much indeed. That's Johannesburg Councillor Nicole van Dyk. I was also in conversation with Dr. Ferial Adam from the Water Lobby Group, WaterCan.